Often vulgar, always explicit, and sometimes funny.
Slap box. Slap box.
Welcome to the Slapbox Podcast. This is episode 603. I am your host, Josh Albrecht, recording once again inside the Slapbox penthouse. My trusty sidekick, Agent Fox Mulder, the three-legged kitty cat, is stalking around somewhere. He's hiding out. He's hiding out like Pablo Escobar. The last days before his demise. That's right, I've been watching a lot of Narcos. Anyway, I went back through and watched the two seasons about the takedown of one Pablo Escobar with the great Pedro Pascal playing Agent Peña. Javier Peña. Anyway, I'll talk more about Pablo Escobar Gaviria in a minute. I've had a good day. Had a good day. Got a nice size little bonus from work. From my main job. And considering I get 5 paychecks this month, so I felt like I could splurge a little bit. But last night playing COD with the boys. My Can-Am peeps. My steelworker. Compadres. And I was like, you know what? I was sucking ass hardcore, and just in passing said that, you know, I could really use a better monitor. And Pee-wee, of course, was talking about his monitor that he's got like a 4K monitor, and he dropped like 800, I think, on his, and it's the curved monitor. It's like 32 inches or something of that nature. And I was like, you know what? Right after we talked about this, I pulled up on my phone one micro center that, of course, there's one over in Brentwood, which isn't too far from here. And so I looked it up, and lo and behold, I just happened to nonchalantly mention, like, it would be great to have a new monitor. I mean, I got the PC upgrade. And what better way to enjoy it than a nice, clear, fucking high-def monitor? And they were having a big sale on monitors. They got a big sale on a bunch of shit. And I was like, fuck, I guess I need to go to Micro Center, buy a fucking monitor tomorrow. And Pee-wee's like, fuck, I'll go to Micro Center. I've been there forever. And so we made a day of it. And since he upgraded my PC, I was like, I told him I was going to get him some fucking sushi. I figured I owed him at least that for hooking me up with a PC upgrade. So we drove over to Brentwood this morning. When we got there, man, I mean, that place is, it's like Shangri-La. If, like, you're big into, like, PCs, man, it is, even if you're not, you're just, like, into gaming, like, you got consoles, you might decide you want to switch to a PC going in there. They've got so much shit. It's crazy to have a store like that these days, because everything's, like, sold online now. And yet, this is a retail store that seems to be thriving. There's quite a few locations, I believe, in the U.S. And it's a large retail store. There is a lot of shit. And you can get everything you need to build your own PC. I mean, I talked about it before on this podcast, but, I mean, it is, there is a fuck ton of different monitors there to choose from. And I didn't go too insane. I ended up spending $300 on one, which, you know. I'm going out next week. I'm going to spend a lot of next weekend for St. Pat's. You know, I'm going out. I'm going to the casino. But I already put money to the side for that one. And then going to the Blues game the following day. So I'm going to spend some good money, like, next weekend. So I probably shouldn't have spent all this money on a monitor. But again, I got Okay, it does sound like work is going to hopefully pick up like the week after next. We should hopefully be back on 5 days a week and possibly even overtime, either like next, or not the next week, but the week after next. Next week, I'm only working 3 days at the full-time job. But after that, it's hopefully going to go back to normal time. I can hopefully go back to working one job. And yeah, should be able to get more bonuses and stuff and hopefully level out. But that being said, yeah, we went to we were at Micro Center, and Pee-wee got a couple of things. He got some, I think he got some RAM and possibly even a hard drive or SSD drive. I'm not sure what all he bought. He got like a toolkit too that seemed to have quite a bit of stuff in there, which I almost bought one too. But like, oh, man, I gotta focus up. I came here for a monitor. Let's just get a fucking monitor. And I did manage to just walk out of there with a monitor, but I got a it is I'm gonna look up the fucking name of the monitor now. Anyway, it was not what I wanted. A open, I guess, something like that. It is a, I want to say, 34-inch. You know what? I'm going to pause this for just a second while I go over. Shit, I'm pulling out the fucking manual on this fucker. Yeah, so it's a AOPEN. Just spelt literally all one word, A-O-P-E-N. So AOPEN, I guess, is how you would pronounce it. Anyway, it's the HC5 series. 34 HC5CU, so it's 34-incher. And I think the refresh rate on this sucker, I believe it's 2K, and it's got a it's not quite the 4K, you know. I wasn't dropping like the $800 and shit. Though there were some 4K ones that were reasonably priced, only like $100 or $200 more, but I was already spending too much money that day. I don't want to go too nuts. But yeah, this one's got a max resolution through DisplayPort with a 3440 by 1440 with 180 hertz refresh rate there. And holy shit, pulling up Call of Duty. I mean, you notice the difference. I mean, with the PC upgrade plus this new monitor, it's looking pretty fucking nice. Pretty fucking nice. And yeah, so it's pretty fucking tight. I was kind of looking at keyboards. Thankfully, I didn't have a cart with me, and I was just carrying the monitor at that point, and rather large box. Not real heavy, but rather large box. Kind of inconvenient to be carrying that around the store, so I didn't end up buying anything else. I managed to make it out of there with just the monitor. And though it was difficult to hold myself to just that, it was there was a lot of things calling my name, just going, you want to buy me? You want to buy me? You need to buy it all. Build a new PC. Build it and they will come. Build it and you will come. Although I don't really need that. I've got the VR headset for coming. That's my cum device. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool going to that store, man. It's good thing that it's a kind of a far drive for me, because if that place was fucking nearby, man, I would be fucking broke within a week. I'd be destitute. I'd have an awesome PC, but man, I'd be living in a box. Poor Agent Mulder would be curled up with me inside a box. It'd be the box for the PC. But yeah, after we left there, I first was going to drive to a sushi place around there. It was called Wasabi something or other. Wasabi Grill, I think. But there was no, it was like you had to parallel park, and I just didn't really want to, I'm not fond of parallel parking. I haven't even attempted it in many years. even though I have like the perfect car for parallel parking. Although I feel like if it was an automatic, it'd be a lot easier to parallel park with it being a stick shift. It makes it a little bit more difficult. Anyway, we were like, you know, because we were both pretty hungry at that point after shopping at Micro Center. We were thirsty and hungry. And then I was just like, you know what, fuck it. Let's stop over at Wally's there in Fenton and maybe get some treats from there. So we picked up some snacks, some jerky, some other snacks, and some refreshments. I got Gatorade. And of course, yeah, we headed back and got sushi here in town. Sadly, there was... if you're familiar with Washington, Missouri, they had in the old Ponderosa building, they had put a cherry blossom place that had sushi. Pew and I had gone there one time before. And I think I'm pretty sure that's the only time I ended up going there. But man, they had really good sushi. I had the Viking roll. I talked about it on the podcast. It was a month or 2 months. It was a while ago. A couple months ago, I guess. And the Viking roll, they set it on fire and brought it out. It's fantastic. Unfortunately, though, when we showed up, it was like one car in the parking lot, and then it said it had an opening soon sign. We realized the name on the outside of the place had changed, some like Hibachi Grill, something or other. It mentioned like sushi as well. I don't know what happened, if they sold the place to somebody else, or they're just doing a name change, or just but Cherry Blossom no longer, sadly to say it. So, however. I mean, I'd gotten myself worked up for a couple of weeks on getting sushi. And we were talking like, yeah, dude, I'm getting you sushi for hooking me up with the PC. And then, thankfully, though, we still had Hoshi over on Jefferson Street, which was the former home of Tacolicious. That used to be there many years ago at this point now. But Hoshi's good. They got good stuff. I ordered the Washington Fire Department roll, which is a little spicy. That's a good one. I've had that one before. I had the Red Dragon, and the Goblin. That was the other one I got. It's good stuff. Good stuff. We ate it. We came back here to the penthouse and ate it, and then Agent Mulder smelled the seafood, and he's like, "What the fuck is up, dude? You got to give me some of that shit." He was all begging and everything. I ended up caving a little bit just first I let him smell some wasabi because I already knew he does not like wasabi because I let him smell it before. And he's just, you know, that kind of already deterred him slightly. And then I did put a little bit, just a little nibble of like sushi in his bowl, and he wouldn't eat it that at first. And then he seemed to kind of be bored. He just like kind of decided he didn't want any of it. But like he ended up like nibbling that part. I tried to make sure there wasn't anything that, like, sketchy on there that might make him sick. But yeah, we had the sushi. It was good. And I hooked up the monitor now. Which, damn it, I got to blow my nose. So here comes another pause as I go in the other room. Nose blown now. It is currently somewhat empty of mucus and snot. So I hooked up the display like right before, I guess, jumping on to record here. And it looks nice. It looks nice. I just changed my display settings a little bit. It took me a while to find the power buttons to the damn screen. I already hooked up the monitor and everything before I, like, searched for the buttons. And currently with my setup, I got rid of my old monitor that was, like, a junker monitor that was mainly I kept to the left side of the screen. And for that one, I typically just have, like, if I'm doing, like, right now when I'm recording a podcast, I keep my Audacity software open up on that screen. So I can see the recording, make sure that's all crystal clear. Middle screen, I tend to, like right now, I've got Chrome open up over there where I've got some shit on Pablo Escobar in front of me. In the right screen, I've got Firefox open with a bunch of browsers. A bunch of tabs on the browser open on that one. Typically, what I really wanted ended up doing like three monitors for was for streaming on Twitch, which I've only done really a handful of times at this point. But I like to have my OBS open to the left screen and be able to see what's actually being recorded, or not recorded, but streamed rather, to how it looks. Make sure it's all doing well, I guess, that the stream is maintaining. And then in my middle screen, of course, whatever game I'm playing is going to be right there. Then on the right screen, that's where I pull up my chat for Twitch. So I can have that nice and big. That's actually still my biggest monitor. I thought about getting a different monitor today that was actually like the same width as this, or roughly the same width, but it had not quite, well, I don't think it was quite as wide, but the height on it was better. And feel like the print would be a better size at that point. Just fitting the aspect ratio to it seemed like it would have probably been easier with that monitor, but I don't know. I went with this one. After just like looking at it and seeing like how the picture looked and stuff, I ended up just, this is the one I went with. It sucks because, you know, like if I really wanted to, you know, check and see how a display, the monitor, you know, I would really want, I would want to play the games that I play on it and stuff. And you just can't just do that at a micro center and get the real experience of what you want. So you just kind of have to go off what, you know, it kind of looks like in the store, the display. And that's another great thing about, at least with going to an actual physical retail store, brick and mortar, because you can actually go in there and fucking see the things, as opposed to buying online, where, I mean, you can read the specs and everything, but you don't get to actually physically see it. And I feel like, you know, maybe if I had experienced enough different types of monitors and knowing the specs on all of them, I'd probably have a good idea, and just by knowing like the different brands, by like playing on them, whatever, have an idea. But I haven't messed around with that many different monitors, so being able to physically go in and see it is just fantastic. That is, you just can't beat that. And thankfully, though, I mean, there was monitors in there for a grand or more. I wasn't gonna do that. I could have, you know, pulled out. I've got room on my credit card, but there is a lot of debt on those credit cards, you know, the main credit card, whatever. And yeah, it just seemed like a bad idea to do that. That being said, though, I mean, I'm liking it right now. I might end up having to change the size of the icons and stuff, because right now, icons on the desktop, they're awfully small, and the text is kind of small. I mean, I can read it, but I'm getting older. This could be a problem reading all that. But damn, the clarity on everything. Ooh, so good. So good. Just looking at that in my middle monitor to the one to the right, which is actually, maybe I should have set these up a little bit differently, but I like having the stuff on the right to be the bigger monitor. It's like if I'm going to pull a chat up in there, and I can fucking read everything so much easier. It's not as wide as the one in the middle, but it's man, at least another inch or so more on height. So it makes a big difference for seeing, you know, reading things and whatnot. And then my second best monitor is now to my left, as far as like refresh rate, all that shit goes. But it's pretty exciting. Pretty exciting having this new toy. And I was playing Call of Duty. It was taking me a little bit. I had to change the settings in the game to really get the aspect ratio on that right. Seems like I got it pretty decent. I feel like I probably should have done that when doing the PC upgrade, because it looked not right. And since doing so, I've played like dog shit on Call of Duty. But I feel like I got it set right now. And that was, you know, my main goal was to be able to see that. It's going to take some adjusting to get used to the curve of the screen. I'm not used to that. But I feel like it'll make me feel more natural, I would think, over time. Like, I'm in the fucking game. Like, I've got the VR headset on, and I'm in the shit. Right now, I actually have Pablo Escobar smiling right at me in his mugshot photo. As I've got his Wikipedia page pulled up there as... That has got to be the best mugshot ever. I realize this guy was a evil, evil person, even though, like, he built a lot of schools, did a lot of good for poor areas in Medellin, or Medellin, I guess is how the locals pronounce it. I'm probably butchering that, but anyway. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people looked at him as a saint and didn't believe the stories about him being a narco-terrorist. If you will. That guy is, by all accounts, would end up being like the most richest criminal that ever fucking lived. According to his Wikipedia, and this is, I don't think anybody knows an exact number on his wealth, but like at the height of his crime and all of that, which I've seen varying estimates on this. On the Wikipedia page, it says, well, let's just read this whole thing here at the top here. Pablo Emilio Escobar Gaviria was a Colombian drug lord, narco-terrorist, and politician who was the founder and sole leader of the Medellin cartel, dubbed the King of Cocaine. Escobar was one of the wealthiest criminals in history. I would say probably the wealthiest. Having amassed an estimated net worth of $30 billion U.S. dollars by the time of his death, equivalent to $70 billion as of 2022, while his drug cartel monopolized the cocaine trade in the United States in the 1980s and early 90s. So yeah, the dude would have been like topping out Forbes. Obviously that now we have people that are worth more than that, but at the time he had to be like the richest person in fucking, in the world. I'm going to check that out. Maybe let's see, richest person. Well, let's just see. It was 93 when he died. Let's go to 91. Let's see what not that the internet's, you know, going to tell me. World 1991. I figure, is it going to say, no, it's not going to say Pablo Escobar? Oh, shit. Oh, it looks like, Pablo Escobar was probably the richest person. Okay, in 1991, Forbes ranked Takichiro Mori. Was the founder of Mori Building Company. Forbes ranked him the richest man in the world during 91 through 92 with a net worth of $15 billion in 91, approximately equivalent to $28.9 billion today's value. And according to what I just read on... This is another Wikipedia article. According to what I just read on Wikipedia, fucking Pablo Escobar, way more than that. Celebrity net worth, which is not accurate at all. Let's see what they have to say. In 1981, they're saying Sultan Haji Hassan al-Bolkai Mulzadin Wudalo. Oh, fuck. I'm fucking this name all up. $31 billion. Is that $31 billion at that time? The Sultan of Brunei was the richest person in the world 30 years ago through $31 billion today would barely place on the top or richest people. So that's $30 billion back then. So he might have actually had more money than Escobar. Yeah, on this list is not Pablo Escobar. Yeah, so there's some varying... Like the Japanese fellow is mentioned on this list as well. But not, it's a varying thing. I think that, you know, public knowledge of actual net worth is fragmented and not really known the best. This is Pablo Escobar and Forbes billionaires, billionaire issues. But it's just an image. Damn it. Just the cover of it. Why can't I see? Oh, okay. This is an actual article. But yeah, in Forbes, they did have an article about him. Pablo Escobar. Interesting. At the time, they estimated it was $1 billion. But it sounds like they got smarter about things and realized just how insanely wealthy this motherfucker was. There's been very wealthy drug lords since then. But I don't know that any of them hit the level of Pablo Escobar. I mean, holy shit. The Netflix show, from what I've researched, by research, I mean I just watched some YouTube videos. So, you know, I question the accuracy of that. And it's, you know, calling that research is like a joke. But anyway, I have listened to his son talk. Juan Pablo was his son's original name, but he changed his name. I do not recall what his current name is. Actually, I looked up his daughter, too, which his daughter is just, she's apparently one of the world's biggest recluses. She's very afraid to let herself know, because, I mean, Pablo Escobar was a narco-terrorist. He fucking had a plane blown up that carried, like, 100 people. I'm not sure. It was a large plane that was carrying that was supposed to be a plane that a presidential candidate was getting on, but I guess he was tipped off right before boarding the flight that, don't get on that plane. And something along those lines. If you watch the Netflix show, it was that way. The DEA is like, let's not go on here. Pretty sure he's going to try to kill you. I don't know how it went down in real life, but he did blow up a plane. He paid somebody else to go put a bomb on this plane. And, I mean, he was bombing all kinds of stuff, and he was killing politicians. He did kill a few presidential candidates, as well as other politicians. I mean, he had like Congress attacked, or just like some kind of government buildings like attacked and shit. I mean, the guy did a lot of shit. And then, I mean, the story of Pablo Escobar, if you had not looked in that stuff, there's plenty of documentaries about him on the internet, on YouTube, what have you. And of course, the Narcos show is very entertaining. Fairly accurate. There's a lot of shit that changed in it. I feel like that one is more accurate than the Griselda show about Griselda Blanco. It's insane that he had kidnapped a lot of people, assassinated people. I mean, he was responsible for a lot of deaths, and he was able to make a deal with the Colombian government that he would surrender and be put in a prison that he built, where there was basically whatever he wanted in there. And apparently he had hookers show up there and just conducted business as usual. The government and the military weren't allowed within a certain, like, mile radius of La Catedral. It was, I believe, what it was called, the prison where he stayed at for a while. But then, of course, I guess it was in the show, at least, it was because he murdered somebody inside there is what forced the military to go in there and try to get him out. And then he escaped and shit went crazy. Let's see here. Let's see. I guess I can read a little bit more of like the Wikipedia page. Try to find. Oh, he had hippos too. Yeah, here we go. Let's just skip the rise to power thing. I mean, it's pretty crazy his rise to power. Apparently, he used to steal like in the when he was really young. He used to steal like gravestones and shit. I mean, he sold. I think marijuana was the first thing he sold before getting into selling coke and all that. But here's what Wikipedia has to say about at the height of his power. Again, take it with a grain of salt. Wikipedia, anybody can put shit on there. Escobar was also involved in philanthropy in Colombia and paid handsomely for the staff of his cocaine lab. Escobar spent millions developing some of Medellin's poorest neighborhoods. He built housing complexes, parks, football stadiums, hospitals, schools, and churches. Escobar also entered politics in the 80s and participated in and supported the formation of the Liberal Party of Colombia. In 1982, he successfully entered the Colombian Congress, although only an alternate. He was automatically granted parliamentary immunity and the right to a diplomatic passport under Colombian law. At the same time, Escobar was gradually becoming a public figure, and because of his charitable work, he was known as Robin Hood Paisa. He alleged once in an interview that his fortune came from a bicycle rental company he founded when he was 16 years old. That's a lot of money to get from a bicycle rental place, you know? In Congress, the new Minister of Justice, Rodrigo Lara Bonilla, had become Escobar's opponent, accusing Escobar of criminal activity from the very first day of Congress. Escobar's arrest in 1976 was investigated by Lara Bonilla's subordinates. A few months later, liberal leader Luis Carlos Gayan expelled Escobar from the party. Although Escobar fought back, he announced his retirement from politics in January of 1984. 3 months later, Lara Bonilla was murdered. I wonder by who? Who called for that murder? Anyway, the Colombian judiciary had been a target of Escobar throughout the mid-1980s. While bribing and murdering several judges in the fall of 1985, the wanted Escobar requested the Colombian government to allow his conditional surrender without extradition to the United States. Their proposal was initially answered in the negative, and Escobar subsequently founded and implicitly supported the Los Extraditable Organization, which aims to fight extradition policy. The Los Extraditable Organization was subsequently accused of participating in an effort to prevent the Colombian Supreme Court from studying the constitutionality of Colombia's extradition treaty with the U.S. In the support of November 6, 1985, far-left guerrilla movement that attacked the Colombian judiciary building and killed half of the justices of the Supreme Court in the late 1986, Colombia's Supreme Court declared the previous extradition treaty illegal due to being signed by a presidential delegation, not the president. Escobar's victory over the judiciary was short-lived, with new president Virgilio Barco Vargas having quickly renewed his agreement with the U.S. Again, I'm probably butchering these names. I apologize. Escobar still had held a grudge against Luis Carlos Gayan for kicking him out of politics, so Gayan was assassinated on August 18th, 1989. At Escobar's orders, Escobar then planted a bomb on Avianca Flight 203 in an attempt to assassinate Gayan's successor, Cesar Gaviria Trujillo, who missed the plane and survived. All 107 people were killed in the blast. Because two Americans were also killed in the bombing, the U.S. government began to intervene directly. And after that assassination, of course, is when he went to La Catedrale Prison. Anyway, but yeah. So in that, it sounds like the DEA probably wasn't in. It just sounds like he just didn't. He got on a. Just didn't get on that flight. And like, oops, we blew up the wrong plane. Anyway, yeah, and then of course he died when the DEA and the Colombian like military closed in on him. From what in the show, I mean, he's running on the rooftops, which, I mean, there's pictures of Pablo being dead on the rooftop, and it looks like, you know, he did try to run from the cops on like a rooftop. There's a famous picture of the DEA agents in the like Colombian military there with Pablo's corpse. And the show shows it as there was just a big shootout, and Pablo and his one Sicario that was with him were shooting it out with the police in the show. I don't know if there's anybody with him in real life, if he was just running on his own. But according to Pablo's son, which in the show, he gets shot down by the military and DEA, just shoot him, light him up. And, but in real life, it sounds very plausible that Pablo's son is probably correct on this, that he wanted to end it himself, and that he killed himself with a fatal shot. He was shot, like, behind the right ear, and that was one thing he always told his son: if you need to kill yourself, this is how you do it. Don't put the gun in your mouth. I feel like I shouldn't be advocating this, but it's already a little late, I guess. But, yeah, don't put it below your chin, like in your mouth. He was saying that you got to put it, I guess, like in your right ear or like right behind your right ear. I think it was like right behind the right ear. I don't know. I don't plan on doing this, so I'm not going to really research that. Anyway, whatever he said to do to kill yourself is exactly the kill shot that took him out. Also, Pablo Escobar was very aware of the fact that the DEA was monitoring his use of the radio. He knew it was a death warrant to use the radio. On the show, I mean, he was constantly using it to contact his wife, Tata. And, which, in the show, it's kind of weird. His kids are, like, very young when he gets, when he dies. But, in real life, like, his son was 16 at the time Pablo was shot down or killed. What, you know, when his life expired, when he was snuffed out. Anyway, yeah, his son seems to think he purposely called his son because he just wanted this shit over with. He wanted to die because his family was being used as pawns with the hit squad Los Pepes, which was people that had been persecuted and basically by Pablo Escobar, that had family members, friends killed and whatnot. And it was involved with militants and all kinds of people, and they were just going out as a hit squad, going after Pablo's people. And because that was out there, he knew that the Colombian government basically was holding on to Escobar's family as they, in the show, I know they made it to Germany, but when they got to Germany, the German government said, like, no, we're not going to let you in, send you back to Colombia. I don't know whether or not they made it to Germany, but I know that they had to basically stay in Colombia. And apparently that's a big reason why Escobar was like, I'm fucking ending it now. We're going to let these people find me and have a shootout. And yeah, I guess it seems weird, though, that he would shoot himself. I guess he's having a shootout. I don't know that using the radio at that point, he thought, like, yeah, I'm going to end it here. But I can fully see him just, you know, like, yeah, not wanting to get captured. At that point, I think he would have been extradited to the U.S., and apparently he was very much against that because Colombian jail would have been a lot easier. Even if it wasn't a jail that he built, I'm sure he could have ran the show there. Where's the U.S.? They're just going to treat him like any other inmate. And that was one of the big reasons why they fought extradition for the narcos. Man, the story of Escobar is just fucking insane, though. Like, here on the Wikipedia, they talk about his hippos. See here. Escobar kept four hippos in a private menagerie at Hacienda Napolis. They were deemed too difficult to seize and move after Escobar's death, and hence left on the unintended state. By 2007, the animals had multiplied to 16. Jesus. from 4 to 16, and had taken to roaming the area for food in nearby Magdalena River. In 2009, two adults and one calf escaped the herd, and after attacking humans and killing cattle, one of the adults, called Pepe, was killed by hunters under authorization of the local authorities. As of early 2014, 40 hippos have been reported to exist in Puerto Triunfo, Antigua, department, from the original four belonging to Escobar. So they've multiplied by, as at least of 2014, by 10. Without management, the population size is likely to more than double in the next decade. Jesus, that's a lot of hippos. The National Geographic Channel produced a documentary about them titled Cocaine Hippos. A report published in a Yale student magazine noted that local environmentalists are campaigning to protect the animals, although there is no clear plan for what will happen to them. In 2018, National Geographic published another article on the hippos, which found disagreement among environmentalists on whether they were having a positive or negative impact. But that conservationists and locals, particularly those in the tourism industry, were mostly in support of their continued presence. By October of 2021, the Colombia government had started a program of chemically sterilizing the animals. Ah, so I guess they won't be procreating. That's pretty crazy, man. Just to have, like, apparently he had, like, basically a zoo on that Napolis thing. And I did see on the documentary, I had seen where they talked to Escobar's son, where he's like walking people around and stuff. He did take them to you can take tours and stuff of the estate there in Napolis. He had to like sneak in, and I mean, there's a lot of victims of Pablo Escobar. It's, I don't know how many people he was known for, believed to have been responsible for their murders. Let's see here. Let's look up death toll. According to Britannica, he reportedly killed some 4,000 people. So, Jesus. That is, that's insane. Here's it. Well, here, let's go into Britannica. Let's dive a little bit more into Pablo here. This is 8 interesting facts. This is a short article. Just get some 8 facts here. It says, more than 2 decades after his death, Pablo Escobar remains as well known as he was during his heyday as the head of the Medellin drug cartel. His fixture in popular culture is largely thanks to countless books, movies, and songs. We decided to make our contribution with a list of facts about the life of the larger-than-life Escobar. Rise to power. Escobar, the son of a farmer and a school teacher, began his life of crime while still a teenager. According to some reports, his first illegal scheme was selling fake diplomas. He then branched out into falsifying report cards before smuggling stereo equipment and stealing tombstones in order to resell them. Escobar also stole cars, and it was this offense that resulted in his first arrest in 1974. Shortly thereafter, he became an established drug smuggler. And by the mid-1970s, he had helped found the crime organization that evolved into the Medellin cartel. This is here, mucho dinero. At the height of his power, the Medellin cartel dominated the cocaine trade, earning an estimated $420 million a week and making its leader one of the wealthiest people in the world. With a reported worth of $25 billion, Escobar had ample money to spend, and he did. His lavish lifestyle included private planes, luxurious homes, and over-the-top parties. In the late 80s, he reportedly offered to pay off his country's debt of $10 billion. if he would be exempt from any extradition treaty. In addition, while his family was on the run in 92 through 93, Escobar reportedly burned $2 million in order to keep his daughter warm. Despite his best efforts, however, even Escobar couldn't spend all that money, and much of it was stored in warehouses and fields. According to his brother, about 10% or $2.1 billion was written off annually, eaten by rats or destroyed by the elements. In some cases, it was simply lost. Son of a bitch. Makes me almost wish I lived in Colombia so I could just, you know, go around with a shovel. I'd be afraid to get that money even today. I mean, people were murdered for that money. I wouldn't want to touch that shit. Somebody's going to claim it. You got like $8 million in a field. Somebody's going to claim it. That's a problem. Anyway, Hacienda Napoles. Escobar owned a number of palatial homes, but his most notable property was the 7,000-acre estate known as Hacienda Napoles, named after Naples, Italy, located between Bogota and Medellin, reportedly costing $63 million. It included a soccer field, dinosaur statues, artificial lakes, a bullfighting arena, the charred remains of a classic car collection destroyed by a rival cartel, which actually I think it was Los Pepes, which was also, I think, the Cali cartel was involved in. But anyway, an airstrip, a tennis court, and a zoo. More on that later. The estate, the front gate of which is topped by the plane he used on his first drug run into the U.S., was later looted by locals, and it is now a popular tourist attraction. It says, King of the Jungle, Escobar's private zoo was home to some 200 animals, including elephants, ostriches, zebras, camels, and giraffes. Many of the creatures were smuggled into the country aboard Escobar's drug planes. After his death in 93, most of the animals were transferred to zoos. However, four hippopotamuses were left behind. They soon multiplied, and by 2016, upwards of 40 lived in the area. The potentially dangerous animals have damaged farms and inspired fear in locals. Authorities began castrating male hippos in an effort to control the population. That's got to be hard to do. let's try to wrangle up these hippopotamuses and castrate them. It's going to go well. So Robin Hood here, perhaps hoping to win the support of everyday Colombians, Escobar became known for his philanthropic efforts, which led to the nickname Robin Hood. He built hospitals, stadiums, and housing for the poor. He even sponsored local soccer teams. His popularity with many Colombians was demonstrated when he was elected to an alternate seat in the country's Congress in 1982. Last 2 years later, he was forced to resign after a campaign to expose his criminal activities. The justice minister who led the efforts was assassinated, which in the series, it seems like the day he went, he was expelled. But 2 years, man. He was a politician for 2 years. While also being the biggest drug lord in fucking history. That's insane. Let's see here. Plata o plomo. Escobar's way of handling problems was plata o plomo, meaning silver, which bribes, or lead, plata o plomo, bullets, meaning lead. While he preferred the former, he had no qualms about the latter. The latter option, earning a reputation of ruthlessness, he reportedly killed some 4,000 people, including numerous police officers and government officials. 1989, the cartel was blamed for detonating a bomb on a plane that was carrying an alleged informant. Some 100 people died. Which I guess the informant, I mean, I thought the thing was that it was against the presidential candidate that he wanted dead. Anyway, La Catedral, it's getting into that now. In 91, Escobar offered to turn himself into authorities if he was allowed to build his own prison. Surprisingly, or perhaps not, Colombian officials agreed. The result was the luxurious La Catedral. Not only did the facility include a nightclub, a sauna, a waterfall, and a soccer field, it also had telephones, computers, and fax machines. However, after Escobar tortured and killed two cartel members at La Catedral, which is in the show, I guess that's a fact, officials decided to move him to a less accommodating prison before he could be transferred. However, Escobar escaped in July of 92, and that brings us to the King is Muerto. After escape, The Colombian government, reportedly aided by U.S. officials and rival drug traffickers, launched a massive manhunt on December 1st of 93. Escobar celebrated his 44th birthday, allegedly enjoying cake, wine, and marijuana. The next day, his hideout in Medellin was discovered while Colombian forces stormed the building. Escobar and a bodyguard managed to get to the roof. I guess not technically Sicario, just a bodyguard. Anyway, a chase and a gunfight ensued, and Escobar was fatally shot. Some, however, have speculated that Escobar took his own life. The drug lord, who faced possible extradition to the U.S. if arrested, had once said that he would rather have a grave in Colombia than a jail cell in the U.S. So that worked out for him. Yeah, that's just crazy, crazy shit in the Escobar story. Which they, I mean, they tell a lot of it. They change some things, add some people that weren't involved, do some kind of weird shit. Like, there was the head of the search block, Carrillo, was it Lieutenant Colonel Carrillo in the show, which is not a real person. And he's loosely based on one of the people that ran the search block. But he was, like, assassinated at one point in the show, and that's, like, a big plot point. And apparently, you know, not a real character. But it added reasons, you know, to do other shit the show. I would like to get the DEA book on Pablo Escobar. I can look that up real quick. Pablo Escobar. Pablo Escobar Gaviria. Let's see here. As I can't type. Should have gotten that new keyboard, I guess. Oh, shit. There's all kinds of... Oh, there's Juan Pablo Escobar, his son, put out a book. That'd be a good one to read. Paperback is only like $7, man. I think his wife had put out a book, too. Tata was her nickname. I don't really know what her, remember what her actual name is. But there was, I know the, at least one of the DEA agents wrote a book, and I think that's a lot of what they base the show off of, is the DEA's recount. Okay, yeah, it's both Steve Murphy and Javier Pena put out a book called Manhunters. How we took down Pablo Escobar. But Javier Peña, which is... Javier Peña, of course, is Pedro Pascal's part. I forgot the actor's name that plays Steve Murphy. He's good, too, but... He's a... I know him mainly from Narcos, and... there's a... He was in Logan. He was a bad guy in Logan. Seen him in a few other things, but... I mean, he's not Pedro Pascal level here. Pedro Pascal is the shiznit. Oh, man. Seeing stuff about Deadpool. I can't wait for fucking Deadpool. That one I'm going to have to go see in the theater, man. Got to see that shit in the theater. What the fuck? They're not showing. Whoa, the actor that plays... Pablo Escobar looks so different not as Pablo Escobar. Wagner Mora. Yeah, the guy that plays Agent Murphy, Boyd Holbrook, which he's the same age as me, born the same year, 1981. Fun fact. He's in the last Indiana Jones movie too. I forgot about that. He's been quite a bit of stuff looking at his IMDb here. I'm a fan of the Narcos show. And all this stuff about Medellin and whatnot. As I've also watched stuff on Griselda Blanco where they talk to her son. And seen some in-depth stuff about him, and he's he's probably got a book too, but I'd love to, man, I might have to get some Pablo Escobar books, but I haven't been reading that damn much, and I've got books that I haven't read that I'd like to read here. I don't know that I really need to go through and buy some Pablo Escobar books. But, it, I mean, it's interesting shit. As, man, that mugshot has got to be like the... And looking at that smile on his face, I mean, I got to look... seeing that, I got to be like, this guy doesn't look like a fucking cold-blooded, fucking ruthless murderer. He's just fucking hamming it up for the camera. See, that's what Trump should have done for the camera instead of trying to, like, do this bullshit where he's like, I thought he was Zoolander. Or, you know, Ben Stiller's character, where he's just it's like he's trying to do that. He's just trying to do this smoldering look like, oh, I'm so fucking serious. And then he's selling it on shirts where it says never surrender. But that's exactly what he did, you know. I would opt on doing. I would say don't do that because you did technically surrender when you got that picture taken. But he should have had like a big cheesy smile. I would have respected that more. Not that I respect anything that man does, but he should have gone Pablo Escobar about it. I mean, the guy seems like he a lot of times wants to be like a ruthless crime lord. But anyway, yeah, a lot of stuff. But Pablo out there, and I'm just interested in a lot of true crime in general. But like, there's just so much with the Pablo Escobar stuff about the narco terrorism stuff. You get the hippos. I mean, how quickly he was able to mass that kind of money. His son was talking about when they first started getting like massive amounts of money from like the U.S. Him and a pilot flew in a plane back from the U.S. to Colombia and filled this plane with cash. And I believe just left from a normal airport. Like, you know, back before there was any real security at airports. They just had this thing filled to the brim to where they could barely open the door because there was so much cash in the plane. Like, I'm amazed that the plane was able to take off loaded up with that much cash. You'd think they'd have a little bit of issues, the extra weight. He didn't mention that part, if it was hard to take off. But yeah, I mean, that stuff I just find that utterly fascinating. You know, people that just live just unbelievable lives, whether that be good, bad, or otherwise. Like Dave Grohl, I love reading his book because, I mean, holy shit, the guy's lived the fucking dream of a life. I mean, bad shit happened to him, of course. I mean, he lost, you know, Kurt Cobain died when, you know, Dave Grohl was early to mid-20s. I guess he was probably still early 20s at that point. And at the height of his, I mean, he went from having zero cash, living in a fucking van, then like overnight with Nirvana, just becoming obscenely wealthy. I mean, when Nevermind hit, I mean, they started making money hand over fist. And it was only a couple of years that Dave Grohl was really with Nirvana. Like, I mean, that had to be, like, surreal on its own. But then it just, like, and then just horrible to deal with that kind of loss. But, like, for the most part, Dave Grohl's had a pretty amazing life. And, like, that didn't, and the amazing part is, you know, having tragedy like that and overcoming it and then, like, holy shit, he starts the Foo Fighters, and to this day is going on with it. I mean, they've been going on for several decades now at this point, and still putting out damn good music. I mean, this, and oh, what, bring me to Dave Grohl, speaking of that, holy fuck, damn it, they released the Dave Grohl DG-335 Epiphone, and it's so nice, I haven't played it yet. Waiting for it to be in stock. Hopefully, they'll get one in stock at Guitar Center. Like, the original stock is already sold out day of. This is the most anticipated release of a guitar probably ever. There are so many Dave Grohl fans out there, it's insane. And people have been clamoring for the Epiphone version of this guitar for probably a better part of a decade, if not more. And, of course, yeah, I'd love to fucking play that. Even though it's an Epiphone, it's like $1,300 brand new. They do have the Gibson USA burst buckers that Dave Grohl does use in his DG335, which they, of course, did put out two previous custom shop runs of Dave Grohl's guitar, the DG335, the Gibson custom shop. And that was the last time, was probably like 10 years ago they put out a run of it. And like there was, each time there's maybe 100 guitars. It was a small amount, whatever it was. And on Reverb, those things go for like 20 grand a pop, 18 to 20 grand, easy. You find a cheaper one, you might be able to find one for like 10 grand. But I mean, most of them are going for like 18 to 20, which is insane. I mean, 1300 is a lot to go for a guitar, but 20 fucking grand? You got to be kidding me. Anyway, the Epiphone version seems like because Epiphone started putting out more premium stuff. This is considered, I guess, like an Epiphone custom shop sort of thing, but still not an American Epiphone. Not like the Epiphone casinos that they you can get an American Epiphone of that, where that's gonna the casinos are gonna run you close to $3,000 if you get the American one. Whereas this Dave Grohl one, I mean, that's $1,300. And that being said, though, holy shit! I mean, I want it so bad. I've been playing since they released it the other day. I've been playing so much Foo Fighters, and I've got that Epiphone Riviera, I guess it is, Noel Gallagher signature, which is a cool guitar. I'm not crazy about the neck or the tuners. I don't like the pickups so much. And really, I've been playing so much Foo Fighters on it. I want to hit those Foo Fighter tones, and knowing that they have the actual Gibson USA burst buckers and that Dave Grohl just makes that guitar so much more attractive. Also, the headstock, I mean, it's like a Firebird headstock. You got the six in line as opposed to the three and three. Three tuners on one side, three on the other. You got a six in line like a Fender. And gets rid of the classic Gibson Epiphone like tuning issues that you generally have with like a Les Paul headstock where you got three over three tuners, which is a lot of it has to do with the angle of the string going through the nut can cause a lot of issues with tuning stability, mainly when it comes to the G string, pun intended, and the B string. There's no pun in there, I don't think. Anyway, yeah. Holy shit, I've got to play one of those. I do not have money for that right now. I mean, if we go on a nice run of overtime, I could potentially do that. With that being said, I mean, when these things become more in stock, like most places sold it out of that like immediately. As soon as they released that, the what little stock they had on the DG335 Epiphone was sold out immediately. I'd still like, man, I think they're going to put out like a standard run of the guitar of Gibson. Which, knowing that this Epiphone one is $1,300, I mean, maybe I could wait a few years. If they're going to do a big standard run of the Gibson, like, run, I would like to do that and have a nitro finish. That being said, I would imagine they would produce, if they did that, I would imagine they'd produce quite a few guitars. And I would have time to save some money up or what have you to possibly get one. But as of right now, I mean, only thing I'd go off of to them possibly doing a standard run on of the Gibson is the fact that Cesar Guiken, or I don't know how you pronounce his last name, the CEO of Gibson, who I follow on social media, mainly on Instagram and YouTube. He did like a Q&A when he first became CEO, like, hey, what would you like to see? Or you got any questions? Somebody asked, are you going to do like a standard run of the DG335 and or an Epiphone model? And he just replied, that sounds like a great idea, or something like that to that effect, which I'm thinking they already had wanted to do that anyway. Because, I mean, this is the most asked about guitars. Like, people have been asking this for years. Like, when are you going to put out an Epiphone model? People wanted to afford a Dave Grohl style guitar. And he said yes, like basically yes to it. I don't remember exactly what he said. But they never, he never specified or ever hinted at like a Gibson Standard run other than just the person asking that question. So I don't know whether or not they will do a Standard run, but it wasn't too long after that that they started having pictures of Dave Grohl with like an Epiphone guitar and stuff and just like teasing shit like that. And yeah, I mean, this was a big release. I'm thinking there's a good chance that they planned on releasing that model Epiphone like before even like Cesar became fucking CEO. Seemed like it might have been in the works for a while. But that being said, I wouldn't mind getting that fucking Epiphone. Like, holy shit, I really want to play it. I'm hoping the neck is better than this Noel Gallagher one, which I like. I like the Noel Gallagher. It's fun to play, but there's some parts of the neck, it just seems like fretting out chords is just fucking weird. And just, I think it's like the width of the neck. Something's just weird about it. I don't like the feel of the neck in certain areas. I mean, the neck seems straight, but I don't know. It's weird. I love big hollow, but semi-hollow guitars, though, electric guitars. It's good stuff. They just feel right when you're sitting down playing it. They're so comfortable to play, and you get the acoustic, which most of the time I'm playing around, I'm just not amping stuff up. I play my electric guitars all the time, but I don't always have them amped up. And having a semi-hollow is nice for that because you get the acoustic sound out of it going on as well as you can plug that bitch in. But anyway, I might at some point when those DG335s become fully stocked at places, I might just end up trading that Riviera in for the DG335, although that one is not worth nearly as much as it's like brand new. It's like $400 less than the DG335. So, I mean, they're not going to give me a full trade-in value of the $900 for the trade-in. So I would probably still be looking at like $600 or so to drop to have to actually pay for the DG335 if I trade that in. Either way, though, I mean, those fucking pickups alone are... those are worth it. I mean, I thought about just getting those pickups and installing them in this Riviera, but by that point, I thought about putting those pickups in. I already knew this Dave Grohl guitar was going to come out, so... tough life decisions, you know? It is such a sweet guitar. You got the Pelham Blue... is what they released right now. I'm sure they'll probably eventually put out a gold and a black one, potentially maybe even a white one. Because he does play different colored DG335s on stage. Mainly he does the Pelham Blue, but he's got a gold and a black one he uses a lot. I think he's been known to use a white one occasionally. I think I'd go Pelham Blue, though. Even though it's got a little bit of sparkle, I'm not a sparkle guy, but Pelham Blue is the way to go. It's just when I see it, that I think of fucking Dave Grohl. And it's crazy that I talked this about much about Dave Grohl's guitar after leading in with Pablo Escobar. There couldn't be two people on different spectrums of life than those two. Which, you know, a good fun rocker, Dave Grohl, who's a very wholesome family guy. Although, I mean, he likes to kick back a few drinks, and he has been known to smoke a little bit of the reefer, so I guess in that way he's got a little bit in common with Pablo Escobar, but that's where the line ends. That's where there's connections. The only red string you're going to be able to connect there is right there. They both like to enjoy inhaling marijuana. And, yeah, I'm pretty sure Dave Grohl has not assassinated a single individual. I don't know that for sure, but I'm going to say with like 99.9% certainty, Dave Grohl has never called for anyone's murder or murdered anyone himself. I'm pretty confident on that. There's only like a 0.1% chance. I can't rule it out because I don't know for sure. Now I'm afraid I'm going to get an alert on my phone. Dave Grohl murders somebody. Like, God damn it. Why'd you do this, Dave? I didn't mention earlier, too, not only did Kurt Cobain pass, but he had, like, his best friend that wasn't, like, famous die, I think, just a few years ago. And then, of course, Taylor Hawkins, who became, like, his musician, like, best friend. And just, like, those two fucking loved each other. And that's hard. That's got to be fucking hard. And he's still in the band that, you know, him and Taylor were in together. It's got to be hard to go back on stage and play all these songs that he did with Taylor. That's going to be fucking brutal. Anyway, I've digressed long enough. I've gone kind of long today. Could end up being here for 6 hours if I don't shut up soon. So I guess that's all I've got. As always, that is a kid in a wheelchair, not a trash can.